David Abramson joining us in a studio. And the topic that we want to talk about, what's wrong, David?
Howard, just want to put it out there. You know, you were talking about JR this morning. And everyone on Tuesday nights, you know.
Yeah, so you couldn't go out on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock.
Restaurants shut down. They cancelled movies. Everyone. But you remember Falconetti?
Rich man, poor man.
Rich man, poor man.
He scared me. I used to have nightmares as a kid.
I was petrified, and I'm just surprised that no one, you know, JR was very tame.
No, no, so the reason that I brought that up is because in 1980, on this day, an estimated 83 million viewers tuned into Dallas to find out who shot JR.
I remember.
That happened on today, on today's date in 1980. Oh. But Rich Man, Poor Man, yeah, that was before Dallas, I think.
I think so, but I just remember clearly, I think that's how I became a therapist, going to need to speak about the trauma of Falconetti.
He was a very scary guy.
Scary.
Who played the main lead? Ooh. What was his name?
I'm not sure.
What was the good guy? What was his name? I don't even remember his character's name.
Zanatti, do you remember?
I know nothing.
Zanatti doesn't know what we're talking about. Never made it to PE.
No.
Never made it down there. But, alright. Time is 8:13. I'm Howard Feldman. A very good morning. If you do know, that answer, please let us know on 34519, or you can telegram us on 0618951019. But I want to talk about end year fatigue. Because, despite what goes on in studio, everybody around, not everybody, but many people around me, and it's something that I've noticed on every level, people are tired, people are fatigued. And I'm wondering if it's worse this year than in prior years. Is it because we're just more aware of it and more aware of ourselves? Or is this just the way it is because we're heading towards the end of the year?
Well, I think it has been a very, very interesting year, to say the least. And I think there's been a lot of stress, a lot of challenges, I think, in many ways that, you know, the community, South African community, have faced. Be it from a political point of view, there never seems to be a dull moment. You know, financially, things have been pretty rocky this year, I would say. And I think, you know, whenever there's change, and change that we don't predict, and things seem to be unpredictable, that does create extra stress for us. So I think whenever, in South Africa, I think we thrive often on, you know, we just used to adapt to unpredictability. Mm-hmm. But I think this year in particular has been a pretty unpredictable year, and has, you know, when I talk to my colleagues, you can hear that a lot more people, I think, are in distress and are feeling a lot more fatigued towards the end of this year. So, yeah, I think it seems to be more prevalent.
Is it because change and dealing with stuff, and even dealing with, you know, what I've noticed over the year is South Africans have gone to the darkest place, quite literally with Eskom, but never mind that. But then we've decided that we're not taking this anymore, that we actually are going to be positive. And we have found deliberate ways, and we have made deliberate choices to be positive. But maybe that's exhausting.
Absolutely. You know, I think, and we've said it a few times on the show, that, you know, human beings are interesting people from a psychological point of view, that we have this negative bias. And when we think about it, about all the books on how to be happy.
I've heard of it. People have even written books on that.
Have you heard about
that? It's crazy.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know who would, but I'm just saying.
Yeah. Clearly a very unhappy person.
Clearly.
With no feelings.
Right. Exactly.
No, but I think for me, on the serious note, I think there's this cognitive bias we have as human beings to watch out for danger. You know, to make sure that we are dealing with things that are dangerous, that might come up or that are coming up. And I think it's we have this negative distortion, and I think we really need to be very conscious, not to focus on the negative, and actually, even though it sounds cliched, really take the time to consciously make a list of the good things in our life, and to reflect on, you know, the things that we really are grateful for. Because as I say, we have this tendency to, you know, especially when we're feeling fatigued, to kind of go to that negative bias and look at the things that have been very hard for us, or how tired we are, things that happen in the year.
To some extent, what you're saying is it's a bit of a vicious cycle, because we staying positive and finding ways to be positive, is exhausting. Mm. When we're exhausted, we don't actually have the resilience to be able to continue being positive, and we naturally move towards negative.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think we also do just generally have a bias towards negativity. You know, as I say, that survival, fight or flight kind of, experience.
It's what keeps us alive in the jungle.
Keeps us alive in the jungle. Mm. And I think, that does. It does take a lot of physical, psychological energy to do that.
Right.
But I think it's important at this time of the year. In order to do that, it's interesting because that leads on to maybe something we can focus on is trying to have more sleep this time of year. I hear people saying, gee, it's crazy this time of year. How can I,
It's so interesting what you're saying, because without having realized that, I'm terrible at sleep. Mm. My sleep hygiene is absolutely appalling. And for the last week, this whole week, I have made a deliberate attempt to go to sleep early because I'm not managing otherwise. Leslie's being a little rude because she starts off with a sentence, no offense.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Is this about the song or about what we're saying?
She's saying, no offense, Howard, but nothing could keep you alive in the jungle.
Oh my gosh.
No, she's absolutely right. And I'm absolutely not offended.
I mean, the Survivor series,
last 3 minutes in the jungle. What? I was saying, that looks like an interesting cave. I wonder what's going on in there. Yep, dead. All right, sorry.
When is the sushi coming?
Right, exactly. It's 8:18, 8:19. What do you think? What do you feel about? What do you feel about what we are talking about? So, David, we were talking about fatigue. I mean, I know we're not feeling it now because we've been so energized by some magnificent, absolutely magnificent music. So we're not feeling fatigued. But the truth is that people around us are. You're saying.
Yeah, and the other thing is that, we tend to start reflecting on the year. And we, reflect on what we've done, what have we've achieved. And I think, one of the things that I think is really useful is not to reflect on what one has achieved. Because often we focus again on the things that we haven't completed, the things that we haven't done.
Does a lot of our fatigue come from that, from our disappointment in what we haven't achieved in a year?
There's an actual gestalt psychology phrase called the, I've got to say it right, Zygarnik. It says Zygarnik effect. And I always remember because it's a cigar. Where we tend to quite naturally focus on what we haven't finished, what we haven't completed, rather than what we have. So it's, again, very important. And that's why I think for me there's this whole move to think consciously, to actually force yourself to consciously be aware of what you have done. But also, very importantly, we also tend to focus on what we have achieved, so what we have completed. And I like to think about things in a different way, to think about the year and reflect on the year in a way where we think about what we have learned, because that's really what it's about what we've learned. And sometimes we learn through situations which were very difficult. Sometimes we learn through situations where we haven't achieved the goal, but it really has been very, very useful. And I think it's very short-sighted, actually.
So how do we do that? Do we go back to last year this time and say, this is where I was, and these were some of the challenges, and look how we've managed to get through them?
Absolutely. And even the challenges that we haven't completely, succeeded.
That still might be with us. Yeah.
Yeah. Have we learned something from that situation? Have we gained something from it? Because that's what life is about. It's not only about achieving an end goal. It's about the journey. And
right.
It sounds very, philosophical. But we achieve so much by learning, not just by achieving that end goal. So what have we learned this year? And sometimes when we fail to reflect on that, and that is a very, very powerful way of thinking about the year. And how does this relate to fatigue? Because, we look back and we really, really kind of reflect, as I say, often on the negative, often on what we haven't done, often what we haven't achieved, rather than on what we have, and rather than on what we've learned. And again, very important to really be aware. Take time. Two other things is to be aware of what you have, mm-hmm. the gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, and you're going to roll your eyes because I say this all the time, try, especially this time of year, take some time out from your screen.
Mm-hmm.
Take some time. Go walk in the park without it for an hour. Go have a coffee without it for an hour. I'm not saying leave it at home, you know, because it's very difficult for us to live without our phones. But take the time out to consciously put it down.
I think you're absolutely right. And I find that personally, the more fatigued I get, the more reliant I am on my screen.
And I tell you, we get so much information, and that's also why we, I think for me these days, we generally feel more tired, because we are bombarded with so much information, and actually a lot of the information we don't need to know, and just creates overload and creates often anxiety. So, you know, I think for me it's so important, and it is super addictive, our phones. It is, you know, they are literally an addictive device. To conscious, and this is, I think, the theme of this kind of the vast maybe that I'm giving out today, is to be conscious of, to do, you know, to do things differently. Spend less time on your phone this time of year. Consciously make a decision to sleep more. You know, reflect on what you've learned this year. Look for the good. Really take the time to look for the good. And I'm really confident that you'll find good, because we tend to have that negative bias. So I think those are the important points.
Excellent indeed. Very, very useful. Very, very helpful. Time is 8:33. This isn't the story, but I'm still on Twitter and I see Kamala Harris. And of course, she is, one of the Democrat, contenders. She tweets, "I prosecuted sex predators, comma, Trump is one. I shut down for-profit scam colleges. He ran one. I held big banks accountable. He's owned them. I'm not just prepared to take on Trump. I'm prepared to beat him." I mean, so he's a sex offender. He, according to, I mean, there's nothing that this guy hasn't managed to achieve, according to the Democrats. Either way, there is a story that I do have to tell you. It's not something I say easily, but in the interest of honest reporting, because otherwise you'll think I'm CNN. Meghan Markle has been crowned 2019's most powerful dresser, and a trip to South Africa had something to do with it.
Do you know what? I loved how she dressed, like, before. It's just the South Africa trip where I was like,
hey. Yes, but they're saying South African trip has something to do with it. Rubbish.
No.
Absolute nonsense. According to Vogue, statistics from LYST, I don't know what that is, a global fashion search platform, has given the royal the title after her looks garnered a 216% increase in consumer searches. Second to the Duchess was Call Me By Your Name actor Timothy Chalamet or something, followed by, anyway, I don't know these other people. But there you have it. So, yeah. Yep. Okay. Yep. 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 There's just no words. There's just nothing I can say. Mm-hmm. But in the interest of honest reporting, you know what?
Yes.
I have told you about it. I have you. Now you know. Now you know. I don't buy it. Yes.
Howard. Thank you for that information.
My pleasure.
Being the sexiest man in Glen Hazel.
Yes. Sorry. Oh, me.
I think,
yes.
Yes. I mean, you weren't on the list.
Well, no, not for the best dress by Harper's Magazine. I don't think so. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't, and people aren't voting for me in Cape Town yet. Yeah. I don't.
You weren't you there last weekend?
Yeah, I was. It
did people recognize you?
Claremont Kenilworth, definitely. but I'll get some votes there, but not
Sea Point.
Yeah, I wasn't in Sea Point, where did they go? They spent a lot of time in that, Karpsevich kind of a place, you know, they're there. We didn't get there, so yeah, maybe that's what it is. Either way, the other story that's important is that Prince Andrew is to take a step back from public duties after the Epstein story. Prince Andrew on Wednesday said he was cancelling his public engagement as the outcry from the British Royals' friendship with convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein showed no sign of abating.
Howard, who is giving this man advice? Because I don't know if you saw that interview.
I tried to watch it. I was so embarrassed I had to stop watching it.
It was a train smash.
It was
so difficult to watch. And just really did himself such a disservice.
Well, he clearly didn't plan it, because surely if you're going on an interview like that, you have a list of questions that they are most likely to ask you, and you prepare answers for that. You think about what the right answers are. Your PR person says to you, you need to show empathy for the victims of sex abuse. If you don't show that, you're going to come across as cold and disconnected, or at worst, guilty.
And I think he came across as
Everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
And it was, as I say, I don't know if there's anyone advising him, but that was, and the,
watching the interview from a psychological, psychological perspective, what was your feeling?
Again, you know, he just seemed very, very defensive. And it just seemed like, as you say, he just didn't think things through. You know, it was very much around that there was an overall strategy that he was going to come out and he was going to say that
But what was he going to say? Because he didn't say anything.
Well, he was going to say that
he basically denied everything.
Well, that I made some bad decisions, but really that, you know, I didn't do anything so bad. And that really didn't go down well at all. I think it was a silly thing to do. There's no question about it, but very defensive. And as you say, came across as very unempathic and I'm going to be very, very, very harsh, but actually not so clever.
No, he did come across as incredibly stupid.
Yeah, I'm going to
I'll be less sensitive than you. See, I think he came across like an ox.
He came across as...
Well, I'll tell you also what I kept thinking when I was watching the interview, and I would love your thoughts on 34519 or 0618951019. What I thought while watching it was, he's a symbol of an outdated royal.
Absolutely.
Where he has lived a life so disconnected from reality and from the people that he doesn't even know how to communicate with normal people. It was so foreign to him. It was like bringing somebody from the Edwardian era into a studio and talking as though people watching had no prior knowledge, no access to information, hadn't engaged on any topic before, and he was just going to say these general platitudes, and we were expected to believe him.
Well, like very condescending in many ways, and you'd think that the royal family has learned its lesson, you know, from the Diana days, where people loved her because she was so real and she was so down to earth, and everyone could relate to her, and even the Queen. You know, had to recalibrate her, you know, the way she interacted with the public. And we, you know, really it's many years later and you would have thought that.
Because if we follow Charles, of whom I'm not necessarily a fan, but he's evolved tremendously and more we are seeing him able to connect to real issues that are relevant to real people today. William, who I am a fan of, and Kate, who I am a fan of, we've seen this much, much more. They've done it in a brilliant and dignified way, where they've connected but attained some form of royalty, whatever that would be. We're certainly seeing Harry and Meghan trying. They're struggling to get there. And I'm no fan, but they are struggling. They're trying to find where their place within royalty and within the world is. And I commend them for that. And I commend, William and Kate for that. And Charles and even Camilla. We've seen them becoming much more real. And but we are not, the Queen, I'm sorry, I'm not even letting you speak. The Queen has just come out in the last couple of weeks with a statement to say she no longer wears fur. All the furs that she's wearing are synthetic. Mm. So there's a connection to saying, I understand the world that we're living in. If you take this Prince Andrew's interview and it flies in the face of that.
Absolutely. And I think you've hit the nail on the head as far as just balancing that idea of us still seeing these people as something special, you know, the royals, but at the same time we can connect with them. And, I've watched with a great amount of appreciation and admiration how, the princes have and the princesses have really gone out of their way to promote mental health.
That's been a big, huge thing.
And I think for me, people have really, really appreciated it.
Yes, because they've normalized it. They've said, well, if the prince, these two princes are dealing with mental health issues, then, you know, everybody is.
100%.
Can.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Fascinating. So, Zanati, what's your thoughts?
I haven't even watched this interview.
But it's fascinating to see because he's definitely, you know, these photos that we are seeing with him with these underage girls, they're not fake.
No.
and he's very relaxed with them. And even that comment that actually was so, it was so cringeworthy when he says, you know, she said, no, somebody said we were dancing at a party and he was sweaty. And he said, well, no, actually, it couldn't have been me because I don't sweat. I had a surge of adrenaline during my time in a war. And for that reason, I don't sweat, so it couldn't have been me. What, is he mad?
But that's why I say he came across as being, you know, not so clever.
Like, how stupid was that?
And again, very condescending. Like, people are going to go,
you went to war. Okay. So we're not going to hear anything else. We're going to hear you went to war, therefore you don't sweat, therefore it couldn't have been you raping underage girl.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Have you lost your mind? Did you ever have a time? It is 8:47. Taking a look at the Daily Mail. These are the headlines. The headline, their main lead is Duke Gets the Chop. How Her Majesty summoned distraught son Prince Andrew to Buckingham Palace, ordered him to step down from public duties and stripped him of £249,000 salary amid fallout from interview about paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. And the headline there, that's the Queen sacks Andrew. And second headline, this isn't a short-term solution, it's early retirement. Queen's biographer Robert Hardman predicts a bleak future for Prince Andrew's. Another headline, I don't recall him staying with me. Britain's ex-consul general in New York casts doubt on Prince Andrew's claim that he stayed with him, not Epstein, on the fateful sex allegation trip, in evidence given to the palace just hours before the Duke stepped down. Another headline, these are all the top headlines. I'm just going from one to the other. Downfall of the favorite. He was the national hero and the apple of his mother's eye. But greed, arrogance, and jealousy have proved to be Prince Andrew's undoing. Next headline. All 200 of Prince Andrew's charities to seek new patrons as he withdraws from public life after one by one they distance themselves from him over the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. How about that? It is one after the other after the other. Appalling.
Absolutely. And talk about some serious parenting. calling your son in and saying,
you're fired.
We're taking away your pocket money. It's done.
Incredible.
You know, literally, that's and I think for me, it's so important that something is seen to be done about it. And I think, again, as we were saying, like, just to show that you're in touch with what people are feeling, the outrage. So I think, again, you know, spot on for the, well done, one for the Queen.
Yeah.
You know,
I think she's getting very good advice lately.
Yes.
He, however, is just getting the most terrible advice.
Did I read correctly that his PRO firm, like, resigned because they were totally against him having this?
Yes, I think it was Fergie. I think it was the ex-wife.
One does
have to wonder. Mm. I actually feel terribly sorry for the princesses as well, his daughters, who now will live with us forever.
Absolutely. It's terrible. Howard.
Yes.
I did forget to mention one last thing. We were talking about fatigue earlier, is one of the most powerful things that we can do is actually to focus on other people. I wanted to not leave the studio without saying this, is that, yeah, this time of year, it's so, you know, we do feel fatigued. We often feel, you know, as we were saying, that, geez, to get to the end of the year is just so difficult.
It's just there. You can see the finish line, but it's hard to get there.
It's like the Polly shorts before you get to the end line. But one of the most important things is, and I think the most powerful thing you can do, is to focus on people who need assistance, on giving tzedakah, on giving charity to people. And what's even more powerful than giving it in an indirect way is to give it in a direct way, to actually make the effort to go out and help, because in this country there's no shortage of organizations and people that need our assistance. So that is one way of doing it. Because again, as we know, going back to another point we made earlier, is that goes back down to not only, you know, taking the focus off ourselves, but also this idea of gratitude that actually, you know, there are hundreds, thousands of people who are not as fortunate as ourselves, even if we've been through some very rough times this year. And the biggest gift, and people who give know that the biggest gift you can give yourself is to give to other people. It's unbelievably powerful.
I couldn't agree more. It's incredibly energizing as well, isn't it? So when you're feeling fatigued, as long as it, how do we get to the point then, and maybe it's a whole discussion that we need to have, is giving until the point that you are fully depleted. That's not what we're looking for here.
Not at all. And you know, we have so many opportunities, and I saw the most wonderful thing the other day when, clearly someone who was, not well off was paying for some groceries and was counting literally coins. And the person in front said, "Don't worry, I've got this." And it was such an amazing moment for this person, for both of them actually. And how we can just, if we just have a little bit of awareness, can do some amazing things without actually looking.
So maybe that's the challenge, and maybe I'm going to ask our listeners to try that today and let me know how it worked tomorrow. Do one thing, one small thing that you wouldn't have done but for this conversation.
Absolutely.
And let us know how you felt about it. How, never mind that person. I'm not interested in the person. I'm interested in you. How you felt by doing that small act of kindness for somebody.
Absolutely.
No matter how small it is, it doesn't matter. I want to know tomorrow what it was that you did and how it made you and how it impacted on you.
It is so powerful and it'll be so worth your while to do that today. And as I say, especially being the end of the year, we were all feeling very tired. Go out and do yourself a favor.
And it doesn't need to be a grand gesture.
Not at all. Recognizing someone and giving them the time of day.
Saying hello to somebody you wouldn't have said hello to.
Absolutely. Spending some time talking to someone. Giving them your attention.
Not too much time.
Playing nice music.
Oh, wow. Wow. Do you know, David, just take that knife out of my back.
Just take that knife out of my back
because I feel like I have been stabbed. Wow.
Not you, Zanati.
Well, maybe Zanati, maybe that should be your act of kindness.
Yeah.
Is not to stab people in the backs. You know, just for one day, Zanati.
I'll try tomorrow.
You can only improve from here, Zanati.
Tomorrow's another day.
Oh, all right. Well, on that note, I hope you have a great day. Hope you have a great Thursday. Make it count. Be kind to each other. But most of all, be kind to yourselves. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m.